Are you a small business owner looking for a payroll solution that's easy and stress-free? Look no further than Gusto. With Gusto, you can easily manage payroll benefits and HR in one place. Our intuitive software makes it easy to onboard new employees, calculate taxes, and run payroll with just a few clicks. Over 300,000 businesses trust Gusto with their payroll needs. Try Gusto today and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. Visit gusto.com/podcast to get 3 months free. That's gusto.com/podcast.
Hi, I'm Liz Wilkie.
I'm Caleb Newquist.
And this is the Gustonomics Podcast. In each episode, Caleb and I bring you a little bit of economics knowledge so you can be more informed, use the information in your business or work, or have something to put the kids to sleep on your summer road trip.
Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, or share it with an economics curious friend. Anything you can do to spread the word about the podcast is greatly appreciated. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Caleb.
How's your summer going?
It's hot.
Yeah.
As anything. Yeah. I'm in DC, as you all know, and I've learned everything that I can about what a wet bulb temperature is because it is that hot.
What is a wet bulb temperature?
Okay, so I'm going to say for our listeners, this is definitely not in the realm of economics knowledge, so you can fast forward right through this if you just came for the economics stuff. But a wet bulb temperature is technically the coolest temperature like a human can get on its on their skin in some combination of heat and sun and humidity. So basically the idea is that, you know, everybody says a dry heat is more comfortable. When it's more humid, yep. Your body's less able to cool itself. And when your body gets too hot because it's too humid, it can't cool itself down. And then it's dangerous to human health. It's kind of related to the feels like temperature, except it's a little bit different. And so like OSHA uses it to think about how to instill like worker protections for heat and stuff like that. But it actually is sort of a measure of at what temperature humidity combo can you die, basically, unless you get into the air conditioning or find some other way to cool yourself off that's not sweating.
Feels like something important that we should all know.
I mean, it's definitely worth knowing. Yeah, for sure. So if you were curious from my weekend research for vulnerable people, like elderly people or pregnant people or young children, their wet bulb temperature at which things become very dangerous for them is somewhere between like 81 and 83 degrees. It's actually much lower than body temperature.
Okay.
Typical healthy adult, it's like somewhere between like 85 to 87 degrees. So if you know your wet bulb temperature, then you kind of know whereabouts, how long you can stay out in the sun before you really need to get inside or cool yourself off.
How would one figure out what their wet bulb temperature is?
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration NOAA. Has many calculators, yes, for you to you can put in your exact location, and it will tell you what the wet bulb temperature is and also what the corresponding risk is for human exposure.
This is fantastic. This is going in. I'm not active on Reddit, but this is totally what I would leave in the Today I Learned subreddit.
Well, I will then also preface that for this set of knowledge in particular, I am neither a meteorologist nor an expert in the wet bulb temperature beyond my internet research over the weekend. So I'm going to just put big asterisk all over the numbers that I gave. They are what I looked up on the internet.
Right. Because this is what Liz does on the show, is that she asterisks most of our comments, most of my comments. Anyway. All right. Well, speaking of hot, Liz, things that are hot. The stock market is hot. Have you noticed?
The stock market is hot. In fact, the Dow Jones touched its tippy high of 40,000 points back in May, not too long ago. And it is still hovering right around there, somewhere around 39,000. So stocks have been on a tear since late last year, which is good for everybody that is in the stock market, which is about 40% of Americans. They're all in the stock market on their 401k for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part, people are indirectly invested in the stock market, and that's through a retirement account. Now, and then other people through like other retirement vehicles like pensions for the, I don't know, how prevalent are pensions these days? Is it still, are there still people alive with pensions?
There are still people alive with pensions. I know a few of them, actually, and they're very much alive and very much with pension, but it's definitely a dwindling benefit.
Yeah. But in general, lots of people have exposure to the stock market because, as history has shown, it's a great way to save money, but also grow your money for retirement. Because I don't know about you, Liz, but I'd really like to stop working. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I would like it to happen. And I think a lot of people share this feeling. Is that fair to say?
I don't know that we have exact statistics on it, but yeah, I think what you're referring to is what people generally talk about when they say retirement. And yes, I think a lot of people look forward to and plan for their retirement at some point in their lives.
Right. But something else that I don't know if we have the hard stats on this, but as much as lots of us would like to stop working someday, we're not exactly doing a great job of preparing to stop working someday, right? What I mean by that is Americans aren't known to be great savers.
I might put a slightly different spin on that, because I think the way you have phrased it, Caleb, suggests that the fault is some moral failing of Americans to save adequately for their retirement needs.
Hold it right there. There's no fault. I think it's a cultural thing. I don't necessarily think it is not a character flaw that we have. This is something that I think is deeper than just surface level.
I mean, what I would say is, however you feel about the moral or cultural propensity of Americans to save, the fact is that they are not generally saving enough for retirement. Very high income people, right, don't tend to have a problem, but sort of middle and lower income people really have not saved what is thought to be enough to keep their income steady in retirement.
Right.
And in large part because a lot of them don't necessarily have good savings mechanisms like a 401k, which is what we're going to be talking about primarily today.
Yeah. And this is a concern, because as people age, they're less able to work, but they still have to live, because we're all living longer. In general, we're living longer. And so if you have people who are older, but aren't able to work, but still need to live, and they have insufficient savings to live on, then the rest of us kind of bear the burden of that kind of gap in between what people are living on and what they actually have.
Yeah. I mean, sort of having more elderly people who cannot support themselves on their own income causes a lot of social ills, right? It increases their need for, you know, food assistance and housing assistance. They might delay getting healthcare or medications that they need, right, which can make them sick. If they, you know, end up being reliant on their other family members, then their other family members, right, can have to maybe choose between taking care of them or supplementing their income with, you know, saving for their own retirement or, you know, helping out other family members. So it's definitely not a great outcome to have, you know, elderly folks that can't support themselves on their own income. And as pensions have become less common, and there's sort of this wide open question about, you know, what's going to happen with Social Security, a lot of the shifts in the emphasis on like a retirement plan has been on, you know, 401k will just get people to save. They'll put that money in the market. That money will grow, which is great. If you have a 401k and you put that money in the market, right, and, you know, you put enough of that money in the market and let it grow over time. But the problem is that a lot of people aren't saving enough for retirement. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons for that is that they don't have 401ks.
Right. Yeah, because 401k is like, it's basically replaced pensions as the most common way that people have a retirement account. And that's been the case for maybe, I don't know, the last 20, 30 years. It's kind of been a slow evolution out of pensions and into 401k.
One of the ways that people save for retirement is with Social Security, right? So how much a 401k is in your retirement portfolio depends a lot on, you know, where you are on the income spectrum. So like I said,
right,
a lot of middle and low income people, right, don't have a 401k or aren't necessarily saving in it, even if they have one.
Okay. So then what's kind of been happening over the last several years, let's say not even the last 10 years, there's kind of been a new development in this space, Liz. And that's part of what we're going to talk about today, in addition to 401ks. So can you talk about that a little bit, like what that development is?
Yeah. So there's this idea, right? So one, the idea that workers should get certain benefits from their employers is a very old idea, right? Health insurance is the classic and first mm-hmm. example of this. Pensions also used to be an example of this. But so states in particular are looking at their aging populations and thinking, uh-oh, what are we going to do when all of these folks come to retirement age and they don't have any savings and they're going to put all this pressure on our systems? A lot of states, in order to address this problem, have been experimenting with the idea of what we kind of loosely call a 401k mandate. And here's what it basically is, although 48 states plus the District of Columbia are toying around with or have already implemented this idea. So I'm going to use pretty general terms, and there's a lot of variability, but sort of stick with me and give me a little grace here to paint this thing with a broad brushstroke. So basically, if you're an employer, and in some states, if you have as few as one employee, okay, you have to do one of two things in any state with one of these mandates. You either have to offer a 401k to your employees, right? Or you have to enroll them in a state-run auto IRA program where they will have an IRA, an individual retirement account, with the state. So the most recent stat I could find was from June 30th of last year, where there were 20 states that had enacted a new program. And some of them were still in the implementation phase. So not all of these 20 states actually have a mandate in place, but they're getting ready to put a mandate in place. Okay. And 17 of those states have the auto IRA program. So basically you're saying, hey, employer, you either have to offer a 401k to your employees, or you have to automatically enroll them in the state-run auto IRA, and you have to send part of their paycheck to the state-run program.
Okay. Liz, how have these programs been received so far?
Generally, well, I guess that depends on the perspective, but like generally fine, right? Okay. I think generally, you know, it's not such a heavy lift for an employer to do the registration, right?
Yep.
Or to offer a 401k.
Yep.
And also states have been pretty lenient about enforcement up to this point, right? They don't okay. really want to hit businesses over the head for not complying immediately. They really want to give, you know, nice long grace periods. They just want to get people to comply, you know, sooner rather than later and eventually. But right now it's been a pretty soft launch, and that's, I think, been very good to sort of get people comfortable with the idea and to sort of help them, you know, get used to it and then make the adjustment, right? As opposed to just sort of bringing down the hammer. And so I think that's really helped a lot of folks accept and, you know, get on board with the decision.
Okay.
So, and it's also been effective for helping people, especially low income people, get 401k coverage. So we actually looked into it when Colorado did their program last year, and the share of businesses that had at least five employees offering a 401k went from 25% to 38% after the mandate went into effect. And that's a 401k. That's not an IRA enrollment. That's companies actually just offering a private 401k to their employees.
And so that's good.
Yeah, Oregon enacted a similar mandate in 2023, and they actually went down to the one employee threshold.
Okay.
So the share of companies with 1 to 4 employees offering a 401k plan went from 7% to 11%, so a little over a 50% increase.
And compared to Washington, which is a state next door who didn't do anything, they're basically the rate of employers with that many employees that offered 401ks essentially stayed the same.
Yeah, basically didn't change. Yeah, it was a nice little experiment.
Yeah, so the policy seems to be nudging businesses in the direction that we would want, or that is in a direction where more people have the ability to save.
I mean, it's, if you think about the goal from states as being, we want more people in a 401k, period. It seems to be pretty good at that. The question is, I think, one, is that going to make a difference for retirement, right? And I think we are less clear on the answer to that.
So it appears that they work, but there's some work left to do, or there's some still unknowns.
Yeah, Caleb, that's definitely right. I think it's been effective to get people either a 401k or an individual retirement account with a state, but the savings rates in those accounts still seem to be a little bit lower than you would think would make a difference in retirement. So Georgetown University looked at a bunch of these accounts, and a lot of them, especially in the state-run IRA programs, have less than $1,000 in them, right? And so you think, that's not going to make a difference in anybody's retirement, right? And so, you know, it's kind of like you have an account that you're not using. Mm-hmm. The caveat to that is, again, that we're still in the early days of implementation. And, you know, the first step is to get an account.
Right.
The second step is to fund the account, right? So, you know, you can't save for retirement in these accounts until you have an account. So the question, it's not really like it doesn't work. The question is, how do you get to the next step, right? And make it work.
Incremental progress.
Yeah, but like, we can't claim victory like we've solved the retirement savings problem just from the step of mandating either a 401k account or an IRA account.
So we've come to the point in the show where I ask the question that many people are asking. And I think it's actually an easy one this time around, but why do small businesses care about this? I mean, it's obvious, but let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, great question, Caleb. And I love this question always, because it's the point of the show. Small businesses should care about this one because it's incredibly likely that you as a small business owner will be affected by this mandate at some point in the near future. Either you already are affected by this mandate and you've had to take some action, or you will be affected by a mandate in your state or some sort of program. Seems very likely for a lot of employers. So this is coming down the pike. And I think your decision as a small business owner is, do I offer a 401k or do I just put my employees in the state-run program? Now, I'm going to take a small diversion here and talk about, you know, what the state-run auto IRAs sort of actually do, because they're seen as being a lesser, not as good, inferior product, right, to a private 401k. Mm-hmm. And that's because the fees tend to be higher for IRA accounts. The investment options are different, and also the contribution limits are lower. So an employee can't put in as much tax-advantaged money into a state-run IRA account as they can put into a 401k, whether or not your employer matches, right, the account.
Right.
So there are lots of reasons that a 401k is really preferable to an IRA. Plus people mm-hmm. understand what a 401k is. And as far as I can tell, many people don't understand what an IRA is, right? It's just a better known, product. So for businesses, they're thinking, should I offer a 401k, which has some expenses and some administration costs, or should I, you know, get somebody to do that for me, or should I just enroll them in the state fund? When we looked at California, you know, a lot of businesses weren't offering, right, anything. And then they had to make this choice. And you might think that they weren't offering it because they just didn't want to, right, for practical or philosophical reasons. And what we found is that's not true, right? We, you know, you got a significant increase in the share of employers that were offering a private 401k, that were not enrolling their folks in the IRA program, but were offering their own private 401k, which suggests that these small businesses, or lots of small businesses that aren't offering a plan right now, aren't doing it because they don't want to, right? But probably because they're busy. Mm-hmm. And things sort of get in the way. And this is a bit of a complicated space, right, that they're not necessarily experts in. And the mandate sort of forces you to make a choice that you otherwise might have been just putting off, or you intended to do in the future but hadn't really got around to. And I think employers that choose the 401k are doing so because it's a better product and it's a talent acquisition and an attraction issue, right?
Yep.
I'm not going to put you in the state-run program that has higher fees for you and lower limits. I'm going to give you a 401k, which is something I have to do anyway, and I'm going to take the tax credit for it at the same time,
yep.
right? And so I think that decision is coming for employers, and the obvious decision is not necessarily just to do the free thing. There is actually a employer value in offering a 401k direct because people know it and they understand it, and it's like a talent attraction thing. So to wrap that all up with a bow, to bring it back to your question, Caleb, is, I mean, I think one, small business, this decision is coming for small businesses, and it's sort of going to force the hand of lots of small businesses to take some action here. And, you know, the calculus between an auto IRA that's in the state-run program, that's sort of like table stakes. You're going to have to do that anyway. The question won't be, will I or won't I offer a program? It will be, what's the value of a 401k program that I offer relative to what they can get in the state-run program? And I think that's going to change the decision-making a little bit. And it's also going to force the decision for a lot of these small businesses that, you know, aren't necessarily opposed to a 401k or offering some sort of retirement assistance to their employees, but just really haven't gotten to making the decision yet.
Even though I think most businesses care about their employees, it is one of those things that you feel like people probably are just putting off because they can and they have more urgent things to attend to. and there is a timing, right? Like you have to enroll in the plan, or you have to have the plan set for the upcoming year, so it's ready on January 1st. And so you can imagine somebody in July thinking, oh, well, I can do that in a couple of months. But then there's a window of time where after that point, you won't be able to do it in time for the next new year. And so then you're back to square one where you're like, oh, we don't have a retirement plan for next year, but I'll get to it eventually. And that sounds like a pretty vicious cycle. And it's probably not too much of a stretch. I feel like that's probably happening to a lot of small businesses.
Yeah. I won't claim to know the inner workings of the minds of all small business owners.
No?
But it seems likely to me, right, that that's happening to at least a few folks. What I would also say is this. This is coming as a mandate for lots of businesses, but there are tax credits available to help offset plan administration costs. So one thing that small businesses really should be thinking about is not only what do I have to do, but what assistance is there to help me. There are probably state tax credits in a lot of cases. To be honest, I haven't looked into it, but there are definitely federal tax credits for offering a 401k. And, you know, talking to an accountant or talking to your tax preparer, thinking about how to offset some of those costs. So 401k is a pretty effective retention tool for workers. So there's a real benefit to employers to offering them.
Yeah, Gusto's done. We've done some research around that, haven't we?
Yeah, that's right. So the risk that your employee quits in the first 12 months is much, much lower with a 401k than without, after we control for things like the industry and the pay and all of that stuff. So I mean, right, it's sort of good for business to offer it, but then, you know, it can be made even better by getting your tax credits.
I mean, credits are nice because they reduce your tax liability dollar for dollar.
Yeah, tax credits are great. They're it's very nice to see, like, dollar for dollar, like your $500 tax credit wipe out $500 of tax liability.
Absolutely. That's it for this episode. We hope you learned something new and useful for yourself or your business. Perhaps a 401k. Perhaps. Please let us know what you think of the podcast by leaving a review or sharing it with a friend or colleague who might enjoy it. I'm Caleb Newquist.
And I'm Liz Wilkie. Thanks for listening.
The Gustonomics podcast is made possible by Gusto, the people platform for over 300,000 businesses across America. If you've started a business and are ready to hire your first employee, or just looking for an easier way to run payroll, visit gusto.com/podcast to learn more. That's gusto.com/podcast.